In today's episode, I'm talking to Bettina Mäding, Head of Energy Law at E.ON SE. The E.ON Group is one of Europe's largest operators of energy networks and energy infrastructure and a provider of innovative customer solutions for almost 50 million customers. That means that the E.ON Group is a massive private player in the energy transition. Together with Bettina Mäding, we will be exploring the key challenges and opportunities for energy companies, as well as the role of digitalization in the energy markets and key aspects of the new hydrogen and decarbonized gas market package. Have fun with this episode. I'm happy to have Bettina Mäding, Head of Energy Law at E.ON SE, today in the podcast. Welcome, Bettina Mäding.
Thanks a lot.
Maybe we just start with some basic questions. So maybe because you know yourself a little bit better than I do, can you just say a few words about you?
Yes, sure. So I'm 41 years old now and studied law in Göttingen and Madrid. And yeah, I would say I'm into energy from the beginning of my professional life here. So I started at our Federal Association of Energy and Water in Berlin, the BDEW. And after that, I switched to E.ON. So as you can see, I'm quite lucky here. So this is why I stayed here for about 14 years. Years now in different roles, different cities, and yeah,
quite a rare CV, I would say, because usually lawyers do not engage with energy topics so early in their career.
This is right. And when I started during my university time, we were only two students listening to the energy law. And yeah, so also I can say now there are not so many people who are really into energy, but I can really recommend it to anyone. It's one of the most exciting legal fields you can do as a lawyer because it is really, really active and it changes a lot. And yeah, so I can really recommend.
Yeah, because it changes a lot, you really also need to rely on casual or traditional interpretation of the law, I would say.
Yeah, or sometimes find some quite new ways how to define things. So you are really then the one who can, who can do really a difference there.
Mm-hmm, I understand. And so there are also now other colleagues here at E.ON working with you in your team as well. Why do you need so many energy lawyers at E.ON? So what kind of company is E.ON? Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that.
Yes, so the E.ON Group is one of Europe's largest operators of energy networks, so for gas and electricity grids on the DSO level, so the smaller ones going
DSO,
directly.
Distribution system operator level.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right, going directly then to the customers. And so we are also a provider of energy solutions for approximately 48 million customers across Europe, but not only the commodity of gas and electricity supply, but also e-mobility, hydrogen, digital solutions, and all the new stuff which comes up now for the energy sector. Yeah, and so the headquarters, this is where we are sitting at the moment, is based here in Essen,
Germany,
which is it's a city in North Rhine-Westphalia with a long energy tradition here. And but we also have businesses all across Europe, so from Sweden to Italy, from the UK to Romania and even Turkey.
And because E.ON SE is kind of the holding of the whole network, sometimes there are probably also companies that have not E.ON in their name, but are owned by E.ON.
Yeah, especially the grid companies. Yeah.
So in that sense, it's worth a look into the company structures to see whether E.ON is behind
this
or not.
This is right.
Sounds good. And what are your role and your responsibilities at E.ON SE as head of energy law?
So some of my colleagues, they say we do, and our daily work is what you can read in the newspapers. And I think this is mainly what we are really doing. So we are working with all the new legislative files, which coming up from on the national level, but also from the EU. Yeah, it's quite a broad range. So from the gas package until the renewables directive, digitalization in the energy sector. So everything you might think of when you think of the energy sector. And on the other hand, we are providing some best practice also within the group. So when there are some topics which are relevant for all of our companies, then we are providing best practice to them, knowledge sharing, things like that. I'm also the unbundling officer of the E.ON SE. So yeah, I would say a lot to do.
So is it more about compliance with new regulations and directives, or
how? The assessment. So we have joint process with our colleagues from the political affairs department and also with the regulatory affairs department. And so when a new draft comes up, then we are assessing this together with them and seeing what this would mean then for our company and in the legislative process or the lobbying process, what kind of maybe fruitful thoughts we could also provide.
So in maybe to sum it up, it's kind of, you're an internal advisor to many other different departments. Okay, sounds interesting. So what are the challenges, the key challenges, the opportunities you are advising on?
Yeah, actually, I think it's a really the right time to have a podcast just on energy topics, because there are so many things coming up now. So when I was thinking of what are the main topics at the moment, so that's about decarbonizing the whole industry. So it's not just the energy sector, but really every part of the life. Mm-hmm. So, and energy companies are really in the heart of it, because they provide the infrastructure, and for a lot of customers and also industries, they also provide the solutions for that. So this is why also in the energy companies, they have to change a lot. So on what are your products in the future, but also how you can really extend your grids, for example. So this is really a big topic we have at the moment, because it is important for us that the energy transition is really a positive thing, and we want to bring it really to success. So this is one of the great challenges, but also opportunities we have as a great grid provider.
And that also means, if I may say, because the distribution grids are essential to bring the electricity or the gas from the transmission system to the customer, and especially because there's a lot of new renewable energy production in several areas, and those areas somehow need to be connected to the customer.
Yeah, so if you have a look at the electricity grid, then you have all the renewables which have to be connected. Then you have the e-mobility solutions, so you also have to connect them, heat pumps, so for the heating transition. And you have a lot of other things, and somehow also the industry, if they have to decarbonize themselves, then maybe they will switch from gas then to electricity in some of their production lines. So there are a lot of things changing at the moment. And on the gas side, you have the big transition topic. So at the moment, you have really a stable grid infrastructure, but it is really not sure how much of this grid you will need in the future, and how much will stay a gas grid or maybe have to be transformed into a hydrogen grid. So I think this is also something which is quite interesting also in the future.
And you mentioned, or you're focused now on the let's say the green transition, decarbonization. How much does digital transition play a role?
Oh, it plays really a big role for us, because I think this at the EU it is also named the twin transition. Mm-hmm. So you cannot bring the green transition to a success if you do not use digitalization. And also for the energy sector, so I think I told before that we are also having a lot of digital solutions. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the main topics for us. So at the moment, we are really dealing a lot with the AI Act, which is another file mm-hmm. from the mm-hmm. European Commission, because also artificial intelligence will become more Yeah, more important also for the energy system, if you also want to bring flexibility, for example, in there. And also other things have to be digitized. Mm-hmm. And then you also have a lot of data then when it comes to grids, also customer data. And there are also a lot of digital files coming up dealing with how to share data also in the energy sector.
And maybe also the other way around, not only that the digital transition is important for the green transition, but digital transition means also more digital features, more digital tools that also need more electricity. And so this electricity somehow needs to be green electricity to not lose out of sight the other goals.
Yeah, and maybe then you can also use the things coming up also for your heating system. So we can see that there are some new solutions are coming up with that. So it's all connected.
So you mean such as if you have a big IT server house or a house full of IT servers, that this creates a lot of heat and that this heat can also be used somewhere else?
Yes.
Interesting. And also mentioning this transition from, let's say, gas to hydrogen. There's also the hydrogen and decarbonized gas market package that was negotiated on the EU level. That is, there we now have a provisional agreement for the directive. We have a provisional agreement for the regulation. How does this impact the work of E.ON and its daughter companies?
Oh, so I would say it's quite important for us. Maybe to get a step back, so the gas package, what contains the gas package? So as you said, it's a directive and it's also a regulation. And one major point is that we have then the first common framework for a regulation of hydrogen. So we didn't have something like this before because hydrogen is a completely new energy form or also
carrier.
Industry.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you also have some provisions on how your natural gas system has to be transformed, because it's not just a German goal to be to be climate neutral, but it's a European goal. And so also there it said, okay, how to get your goals also in the energy sector to be carbon neutral until 2045 or 2050.
So maybe we can dive a little bit more into this package. You kind of described already the basic purpose of it. What does it cover? What does the regulation, what does the directive cover topic-wise?
So on one hand, as I said before, it's the common framework for hydrogen. So for example, in Germany, we have some provisions on hydrogen at the moment, but the German legislator always said, okay, this is just until then the European framework comes, because you need common framework for hydrogen for the whole European Union, so not just national wide. And so what we can see there, it's quite, I would say, similar to what we see from gas, is that we have the regulation on how to ramp up then really the infrastructure there and how to structure it. So for example, one thing which was really heavily discussed during the legislative process was the topic of unbundling, and maybe not everybody listening to this podcast knows what unbundling is. So maybe we can explain this a little bit more.
Yeah, that would be nice. So what is unbundling?
Yeah, perfect. So normally, or until now, we just know it from gas or electricity. And so what are the major goals? So if you have a look at an energy company or the energy sector, you often have companies who have their businesses along the whole value chain. So it's not just that there is a grid operator, but there's also the same company operating in supplying a customer with electricity, for example. Or also they have some generation plants. And so there's just one grid in the ground. So you have just one electricity grid or you have just one gas grid. And so it is a natural monopoly there.
Because nobody would afford, or no competitor would afford to build another grid, because it would not bring in the revenues.
Yeah, and it would not make any sense. I mean, to have 20 gas grids lying next to each other. And so there's always just one grid in the ground. But there are a lot of suppliers or a lot of generation companies, not just the one associated with you. And so, yeah, the main point was that there should be a level playing field and no discrimination. So, and you as a grid company, you should treat other companies in the field of, for example, supplying, yeah, the same way, so in a non-discriminatory way.
Because otherwise you would kind of have an interest in only...
supporting your own supplier, for example, yeah. And this is what we know from gas and electricity. And now the EU Commission said, okay, we also need something like this for the new hydrogen sector, because they will... build completely new with completely new players out there. And so we need a proper start with good unbundling rules.
And for the purpose of kind of introducing competition in this field.
Yes.
And you always read about horizontal and vertical unbundling. What is the difference?
So actually you have... different unbundling regimes. So it depends on what you are. So if you are a DSO or a TSO, I said so.
Transmission system operator, or a distribution system operator?
As I said, E.ON is a distribution system operator, and the TSO, so the transport transmission system operator, they are the big grids, let's say. So like a highway. And they have stricter unbundling rules. So they are... maybe someone who is at a TSO can tell you more details on that. But there you are, I would say, nearly ownership unbundled. So for the rest of the company, there is not that many, or there are not that many possibilities to really have a steering then on you.
So ownership means?
So if you are ownership unbundled, then you have really a different owner. I mean, it's in the name, so then you have to sell the company. And then there are two other systems. So one is the ITO, and so there you can stay in your group, company group, but you have to be completely independent and also more independent as in DSO. So you have to have completely different systems, for example, IT systems and all things like that, so that you are completely separated from the rest.
But this does not apply for distribution systems.
No, I'm luckily not. So this was the discussion if for hydrogen there should be just such a system. So in the beginning of the discussions of this gas package, the EU Commission said, okay, let's start with something like that. So that is just the possibility of an ownership unbundling or a little thing below that. So the ISO, independent system operator. But now they changed it. And now you have the same unbundling regime like you have for gas grids. So it is just necessary that you have an informational unbundling, so that, for example, you do not share your informations between the hydrogen grid and the hydrogen supplier.
And what does it mean if we use the words horizontal and vertical? So horizontal means that kind of the operation is unbundled also from electricity, and vertical is really this vertical supply chain, starting with the production, the distribution.
Yes, so if you have a look at the vertical unbundling also for the hydrogen distribution operator, it is necessary to do not share the information. You do not need your own IT system, but you have to be separated from that, for example. You also need a legal unbundling from the other parts and an operational unbundling. But what is necessary, what is possible now in the gas package is that you can stay in the same company as the gas grid operator. So this was also something, is then this horizontal unbundling that strict that you have to build a completely new company just for your hydrogen grid operator, or can it stay also with the gas grid operator? And so the last discussions were that it can stay in one company, but it has to be separated then from the rest.
So in conclusion, for E.ON at least, you can also now engage in hydrogen distribution grids without selling your gas distribution grids or your electricity distribution grids.
Yeah, and I think this is quite important because, yeah, as a distribution grid operator, you always have to look, okay, what is my business case really for hydrogen? Because I don't think, it's my personal view, so I don't think that there will be a large heating system for hydrogen, so for private households like we have for grid, with gas at the moment. Mm-hmm. So there will be a new structure of hydrogen customers. And so, yes, for the distribution grid operator, it is the question, so can they maybe transform their own grids, so their gas grids, then to hydrogen grids, and have at least some of their businesses still in the company?
So this is also one of the challenges you will help with. Trying, or if, I don't know, who decides within E.ON to not use a pipeline for gas anymore, but to use it for hydrogen?
Yeah, I think there are some technical colleagues who mm-hmm. might have more experience in that, so what makes sense and what not. So it also depends on where are your customers. So if you have a lot of household customers but no industry in one part of Germany, and then it might not be, yeah, such a big pipeline necessary for hydrogen, because you do not have any customers there. And so there is the question what you will do then with this pipeline, so the gas grid lying there. And on the other hand, there might be some regions in Germany where you have a lot of industry, not just the big industry where the TSOs connect the customers, but also for the DSOs. And yeah, but I think this is just in planning at the moment, so everybody has to look how the gas grid will transform and what parts of the gas grid will stay active.
Can you still elaborate a little bit more also on the legal considerations and challenges that are associated with this conversion of natural gas grids or natural gas infrastructure to hydrogen infrastructure?
Yeah, so if we come back to the definitions of what is a distribution hydrogen network and a transmission network. And so this is also something which was discussed. Do we need a separation between this, or is it not just the same? So we have this now. There will be a distribution hydrogen network and a transmission hydrogen network there. And so the question is, okay, is it the same like we have now for our distribution gas grids, or can they change their nature, let's say it like this? So for example, in Germany at the moment we are trying to build a hydrogen core grid, so mm-hmm. it's Kernnetz in German,
which also will be connected to the grids in the neighboring countries.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully, yes.
If everything goes well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so this is so that the structure is that you have, it's mainly the TSOs who have something like a planning and say what kind of their pipelines will go to a hydrogen network or will be transformed to a hydrogen network. And there is the challenge that you have to build up a new system or infrastructure, mainly with existing pipelines, but you also have to ensure that all the gas customers still stay on the grid because they need the gas. So it's not that you say, "Ah, okay, now we switch into hydrogen," and then nobody.
Their contract as
yeah,
well, right?
They have contracts and they have a heating system, yeah. And at least now it's cold. So I think nobody would be so happy if you just disconnect it. Also the industry not. And so this is, I think, one of the main challenges. So we have, okay, how to transform and build up a completely new infrastructure, mainly of an existing infrastructure, without really affecting the customers connected to the grid. So this is one thing. And then for our distribution grid operators, then you have the chance to be part of this core grid. And you have also your existing grids and or some pipelines there. And they will be then integrated into the core grid. And if you then, and this is really a legal question then, if you then have a look on how the hydrogen distribution grid is defined in the, in the gas directive, and how the core grid is defined in the German Energy Act, then you can really see, okay, if I now give one of my pipelines into this core grid, will it stay a distribution grid pipeline? Or will it then, if you have to implement the European law into national law, will it become transmission pipeline, which also would mean that you then have to sell this, this pipeline, because you are not allowed and as a distribution grid operator to own this, or you have to build then a new transmission operator in your own company.
Because of the unbundling rules.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe are there any other specific projects or so that you can elaborate a little bit on? Any legal considerations in this context?
So, especially with the gas package. So another thing, this is not so much about hydrogen, but more on the gas grid. So I think what's a challenge at the moment is that on one hand, in the gas package, they said something about decarbonized gases, so like biomethane. And so what's the goal of the commission is to also support decarbonized gases. So the member states, on one hand, they should take concrete measures to assist the wider use of unsustainable or decarbonized gas. And for example, they can grant some production facilities for biomethane a priority connection to the gas grid. And so for the gas grid operators, so if you then have to connect all those biomethane production facilities on one hand, but on the other hand, you think, okay, how can I maybe transform my grid? Or is it really from a business view, does it really make sense to build up a completely new pipeline here to connect such a facility to my grid? So this is another challenge we have, because on one hand, I think it is really important that you have decarbonized gas, so to phase out natural gas to your grids. But on the other hand, you always have to think, okay, if I now build a new pipeline out there, this is a lot of costs, and then it's, you count with 20 years or more. And on the other hand, you plan maybe to transform it, or even not to use it anymore, to cut all your disconnect all your customers. So this is really one thing which is really challenging for us.
All in light of these very ambitious goals that do not leave a lot of time to really achieve them.
Yes, this is right. And this is another thing we have then also in the gas package. So as I said, so decarbonization of the grid is one thing. And I just read an article that, for example, in Austria, they have a completely different system. So they say, okay, we try to really decarbonize our grids and build and getting 100% of decarbonized gas in there, so they do not really have to
make this stretch.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah, maybe they do not even have a really big hydrogen industry, and so. But on the other hand, in the gas package, what they try to do is, okay, you can have, as a member state, you can have a phase out of natural gas to reach your climate neutrality objectives. And if you just decide so, then there's also a new, completely new legislative framework needed. So provisions for the refusal of access. So then you have the refusal on one hand, but you have the priority of access on the other hand for those decarbonized gas facilities. So how is it possible to disconnect the users without any negative impact for that? So as we had before, so if I just disconnect your heating system, it will be quite cold the next Christmas. And and it says everything has to be at the same time.
And so as the business also in the market, you or E.ON with its companies does encounter the challenges. And those challenges, also politicians need to be aware of those challenges. So how do you engage as E.ON ESE with those policymakers and regulators to also shape kind of the policies and regulations?
So we have a joint process internally of E.ON, together with our regulatory department, with our political affairs department, we as the legal department, and also with our technical experts, because we always need the technical impact and expertise, also then for the legal advice, because if you do not have the technical experts included, then you cannot really give a good advice what will work then in the field out there. So I think this is sometimes maybe also the challenge for the policymakers. And yeah, so I think the talking really to the policymakers, it's mainly with our politicians, so with our political affairs colleagues, not with us, but we prepare everything with this.
And you're yourself now responsible for energy, but energy law in particular, but you already mentioned that there's, for example, also the AI Act that will play a role. So energy law does intersect with other areas of the law. And how is E.ON or how is your department dealing with this?
So when it comes to all these digitalization topics, this is also something we work on in my team. So because we think that energy law, so the definition of energy law is quite broad. Mm-hmm. So, and we also say we are not just doing energy law, but energy and climate law, which is also, yeah, a little bit broader then. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we try to stay really open-minded and have and always have a look what kind of other legal changes could have an impact then really to the energy system. So like, yeah, like all those climate files we have at the moment, also coming from the EU, the CBAM, the taxonomy, which is not, I would say, the normal energy law as you have with the grid connection and something like that, but it's really close connected to that, and on the other hand with digitalization. So I think what you need is to have a broad view on everything, because energy law is really connected at the moment. And this is also what I see, is that you cannot be an expert in all the fields of energy law anymore. And I just talked to a colleague from an external law firm, and he said, okay, he works in the field of energy law for 20 years now, but now if he tells someone, okay, I'm an expert on energy law, so he feels not comfortable anymore, because he's just an expert of parts of the energy law.
What does it mean for advice that you would give to aspiring legal professionals interested in specializing in energy law, or as your colleague said, in parts of energy law?
So actually, I think you have to find the field you are really interested in. And at the moment, I think you can hardly do anything wrong, because everything is changing. So also the grid. So I can remember when I started, it was always said, okay, this is the most boring thing you can do, because it's fully regulated and stable and nothing happens there. So I think this is nothing a grid colleague would tell you. Yeah. And now you see that there's really a lot of changes going on. Mm. And we have, I think, the most changes that will also come in the future. This is always the grids are concerned. So I think you cannot do anything wrong if you decide to go into energy law. And we work a lot in our team with new colleagues and young colleagues and students. And they always say, wow, this is so interesting. And some of them, they really stay then also after they're finishing their studies, because I think it's the most exciting thing.
And so any memorable experience or lesson learned from your career that you want to share with our listeners?
So maybe one thing is, what I learned is that you always have to talk to other colleagues, not just to lawyers, but especially to the ones who are really working with, so the technical experts. Because so when I look back at when we had the energy crisis times, so we sometimes just had half an hour or 1 hour to find a solution for a problem. because everything was really going fast. And then sometimes I asked a technical colleague and I said, okay, I have the solution. We write this down in the paragraph. And then he said, no, Bettina, this is not possible because from a technical point of view, this would not work. And then I said, now I understand the system. Let's do another thing. And so if you are just reading your legal papers and just having a look at all the paragraphs and do not understand the technique behind it. So I think you have to go out, look at the pipelines, talk to your colleagues. Otherwise, you cannot give a good legal advice.
So quite a hands-on approach also for a lawyer. And maybe that shows that you're not always in the office, but also sometimes on site.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think this makes it really interesting. Yeah.
Sounds very nice. And so looking ahead, what do you envision as the future of energy law? And how is also your company preparing for potential legal challenges or opportunities?
So I think also in the upcoming years, there will be really high speed on changes. So I think this will remain. We come now from a planning phase to a really executing phase. So you really now are building the grids, expanding your grids. And so it's not just the paperwork anymore. And this brings also new challenges. And what we can see, so in Germany, we had this with our, I call it heating law, so the Heizungsgesetz, where you could see, okay, when it's not just an abstract thing, energy transition and climate neutrality, but it really comes then to the house of every single person and everybody is affected, then there are completely different discussions. And I think what is necessary also for a lawyer is to be able to describe things so that everybody can understand it and knows what's the rationale behind it.
I was talking to Bettina Mading, head of energy law at E.ON SE. Thank you so much. The first season of the Energy Law Podcast was made possible with funds of the Dutch Starter Grant Program, awarded by Tilburg University for my project Transformation Processes in European and National Economic Law, Energy Law as Law of Socio-Technical Change. A special thanks for production support goes out to Mark Ohrendorf from Irgendwas mit Recht.